Hello everyone and welcome to Waystone's FCA authorisation webinar. My name is Claire Sim and I am the CEO of the Waystone Compliance Solutions business here in Europe. Waystone has been handling FCA authorisations for over 35 years and during this time has assisted hundreds of firms to be successfully authorised in the UK. The purpose of the session today is to talk through the FCA's authorisation process and using a question and answer session address some of the common questions that we receive from our clients looking to get authorised here in the UK. I'm delighted to be joined by my colleague, Stuart Holman. Stuart, over to you.
Thank you, Claire. Yes, as Claire explains, we've been helping firms to obtain authorisation for over 35 years. I and one of my colleagues have been doing this within this firm for 25 years. And we're going to talk about, say, the many of the practical issues when it comes to the preparation and successful authorization of a firm. The focus today is going to be on firms seeking authorization under the wholesale investment business regime. That's to say we won't be covering the mortgage or the insurance or the consumer credit regimes because they have a different authorization process. We're focusing on firms setting up in the UK. We have previously done a similar webinar for appointed representatives that are seeking direct authorisation. And whilst the points that I'm going to be talking about today aren't directly sort of targeted at appointed representatives, much of the same points appear.
Fantastic. So, Stuart, let's start off with a really easy one. For a firm looking to set up in the UK, how do they actually go about doing it with the FCA? Do they need to meet with the regulator before they start?
Thank you, Claire. Normally, a pre-application meeting is not necessary. And in truth, whilst it might be the polite thing to do, I think the regulator feels they are too busy to meet with all potential applicant firms. There are some circumstances when such a meeting might be considered appropriate. There are particularly sort of where you've got complex business models or business models that are particularly groundbreaking or present unique challenges for the regulator to be able to apply its standing rules to this whatever this business model might be, then yes, there are grounds for such a meeting. The regulator has also said that they will meet firms where they are potentially coming from overseas and they are meeting to discuss whether they want a branch or a subsidiary application. In our experience, practical experience, the regulator is very much against the idea of regulating new branches. So I suspect the outcome of such a meeting will probably be to discourage a branch application, although it is technically permitted. Also, they talk about potentially having meetings for firms that are setting up in any of the devolved countries, or even if you look at their website, outside the southeast of England. But again, I'm not entirely sure that every applicant who's setting up outside the southeast of England with a sort of perfectly normal business model would in fact get to meet with the regulator. There are a couple of regimes that, again, if you've got a particularly groundbreaking, novel or challenging business model, you've got what they call the FCA Innovation Hub and its regulatory sandbox. Those, again, are different routes into the normal authorisation process, but say they are only for firms with particularly innovative, groundbreaking, complex, challenging regulatory sort of structures or business plans. So normally you don't meet with the regulator. The application is prepared and submitted using an FCA online system called Connect, which is a little bit of a fiddly system, if I can put it like that, to try and use. It, in order to create the application and prepare it, you need to answer questions from the regulator as to what sort of firm you are and what sort of license you're looking for. And those answering those questions are correctly in accordance with the FCA structures, as it were, are critical, because if you answer the question innocently, even potentially logically, but not the way the regulator was intending you to do so, it will throw up the wrong kind of forms. And that, say, is an experience that we have had firms coming to us, trying to do the authorization process themselves, trying to use the Connect system, answering the questions perfectly reasonably from their perspective, ending up getting the wrong set of forms to complete. They're unaware they're the wrong set of forms for the business they want to carry on. They've completed them, submitted them, and essentially the regulator has just sent them straight back again on the basis that they've completed the wrong forms for that kind of application. So as I say, it is important to get advice on from someone who's familiar with these things right at the start, to make sure that you don't end up spending a lot of time and effort essentially completing the wrong forms.
So the application process that is made through Connect is clearly the main process here that we need to talk about. Can you just provide a little bit of colour as to what does that FCA application actually consist of?
Yes, of course. So it is a form-based application. And as I say, the forms that you need to complete will be determined by the type of firm that you're wanting to be, the kind of license you're going for. And as I say, driven by the answers you've given to the preliminary questions in order to create and access the forms on the Connect system. The forms can be divided really into three sections. There's the corporate forms, there are the individual forms for the people who will be running the firm, and there are the forms for the controllers, owners, and shareholders of the firm. Within that, there really are two key documents that are the sort of the critical, crucial parts of the application, and those are the regulatory business plan and the financial projections. Turning to the regulatory business plan, so this is the critical, crucial document for the authorization. And for that reason, it's worth spending time on making sure that you prepare a complete and detailed regulatory business plan. And I say regulatory business plan because that is what it is. It focuses on the things that the regulator will be interested in, rather than what most people would consider perhaps to be a more of a financial business plan. The regulatory business plan is where you get the opportunity to tell the story of the firm, its background, the people behind it, the sort of rationale for setting up in the UK, what it is you want to be doing, how you want to be doing it, why you want to be doing it, the nature of the services you'll be providing to clients, the types of clients, how you'll be looking to support those clients, service those clients, locate those clients, how you're going to be remunerated, the risks that the business sees in its day-to-day conduct of its business, and how that it's rationalised that it's able to conduct that business in accordance with the UK regulatory requirements. It's important also because it gives the FCA case officer who's going to be receiving this application a place to look to get the whole story of the application. They can read through it, and when looking at the rest of the forms, they'll get a much better idea of what it is the firm is about, and that will help them perhaps to understand some of the answers that are provided to the individual questions in the form, of which there are many questions. It also potentially assists a firm by ensuring that the people who are tasked within the firm of preparing and submitting the application can get comfort that the nature of the business being sought, the authorization being sought, is indeed agreed by the key stakeholders within the firm. Now, obviously, with a small firm where potentially all the stakeholders are actively involved in the application, then that's not so necessary. But if you imagine perhaps an overseas firm that's part of a large financial institution, it's going to be sort of important to ensure that the people who need to sort of sign off and approve what it is that's being sought can be seen to understand exactly what it is that's being sought. So, and whilst the FCA application, which consists of dozens of documents, it's difficult to expect all the relevant stakeholders perhaps to read and understand all of those things. Clearly, the people most closely involved with the application need to. It's perfectly proper that all the stakeholders can understand the business plan itself, the regulatory business plan. And that means then, should there be any questions in the future as to, you know, why didn't we get permission for retail clients, or why didn't we get permission to do this kind of business, there is a clear statement of what the application is intended to be for that has been recorded and approved at the right level. And that really make sure that you don't end up a year or two down the line with people wondering, thinking that maybe they got the wrong kind of application because we thought we'd be doing this, we thought we'd be doing that. So say the regulatory business plan serves two important purposes.
So it sounds like the regulatory business plan is an incredibly important document. You also reference financial projections. So what do firms need to think about when articulating financial projections to the FCA?
Yes, you're quite right. So the other critical document in the application are the financial projections. That's not a prescribed form, but there is a required format for those projections. And they're very much designed to demonstrate to the regulator that the firm will be able to comply with its regulatory capital requirements once it's authorised. Usually you have to provide 3 years of financial projections, with the first 12 months being on a month-by-month basis, with years two and three being year-end. But that will depend upon the business model. If the firm, for example, is not predicting to become profitable by the end of the first 12 months, then you'll have to provide more detailed projections until that point, and the regulator can see at what point you become profitable. You'll need to explain the assumptions behind those financial projections, and it's important that they are reasonable, because the regulator will be keen to understand that you're not assuming an unrealistic, unmanageable sort of sign up of clients during the first 6 to 12 months of authorization, or that you can substantiate, if you're looking to manage investments on a discretionary basis, that you can substantiate the size of assets under management that you're assuming that you'll be able to be to secure. So again, say the assumptions need to be reasonable. In the projections, you need to demonstrate that you're going to comply with whatever the financial resources requirements are for the particular license that you're seeking. And as I say, the requirements will differ depending upon the type of license you're seeking. The capital really sort of falls under three pillars. You can sort of look at it like that. You've got the, and I'm talking in general terms because, say, different licenses have different requirements. You have the permanent minimum requirement, and depending on the kind of license, that will most likely be between £75,000 and £750,000. Although again, as I sort of mentioned, there are some licenses where that figure may in fact be £5,000 or £10,000. Then you've got, in many cases, a fixed overhead requirement, which is set at 1/4 of the firm's predicted fixed overheads. And then depending on the kind of license you have, for example, if you are looking to undertake any kind of MiFID activities, then you'll have a requirement to prepare an ICARA, an individual capital and risk assessment. And that again is a sort of the third pillar of the financials, where you actually identify on a reasoned basis how much capital you in fact need in order to be able to manage the risks of the business and develop it successfully. And again, if you're managing investments in a fund structure, there are then some requirements based upon your percentages of your assets under management. So again, it does depend on the type of license that you're actually looking for as to what the capital regime is. And in the application, you need to be able to sort of apply those rules and to set up exactly how the how the firm is going to be complying with that. And assuming it's a limited company, principally through share capital. If it's a limited liability partnership, then it's through members' sort of permanent capital. The important thing is that in terms of calculations, you're going to be working out what the absolute minimum is, because of course you need to be able to comply with that. But as you're seeking authorization, and this is a theme of the regulatory process, this is a gateway. You are sort of seeking authorization. The FCA is the gatekeeper here. And so they are always going to be keen to ensure that the firm can demonstrate that it has a comfortable buffer above the minimum. What is comfortable will depend upon the scale and complexity of the business. But again, so it's important that you do work out what the minimum requirements are, but equally you appreciate you need to have a comfortable buffer above those requirements, because the regulator won't authorize you purely basis on the minimum. Just a couple of other things is that it's not unusual for perhaps UK subsidiaries of overseas institutions, depending on the nature of the business that they're conducting, they may not actually be sort of billing clients directly, and therefore won't have any income coming directly from individual client relationships. And so those firms are typically remunerated on a cost plus or a transfer pricing sort of arrangement. So perfectly common and not an issue as far as the FCA is concerned. And it's not unusual for the level of capital, once it's been identified, it's not unusual for the firm to wait until it's obtained, shall we say, in principle authorization from the regulator, sort of minded to authorize, and to wait until that point to actually put the capital in. Again, not unusual. And one of the things I'm going to talk about is the importance of finalising so much of what you want to be doing before you file the application. But this is an area where actually you set out how much capital you're going to put in and why that complies with the requirements, but you don't actually have to put it in at the point of filing. You can, but you don't have to put it in at the point of filing.
Thank you. So that's a really comprehensive overview of the financial resources that are required. But what about the human resources? What do firms need to do with regards to people?
That is a very good point. Non-financial resources, people and systems, are also sort of critical to the success of the authorization. Looking at the people, it's in simple terms, the firm's got to be able to demonstrate to the FCA's satisfaction that the firm has enough of the right people with the right qualifications and experience in the right positions in order to be able to manage the business prudently and appropriately. How many is enough is not as easy to say, because it will depend upon the scale and complexity of the business, sort of the different roles that need to be performed, and the sheer breadth of what the firm does and the volume of what it does. So it's not going to be very much on a case by case basis to identify really how many people the firm needs in these key positions in order to satisfy the regulator that it has enough non-financial resources in order to be authorized. It's probably safe to say that anything other than the simplest of business models needs at least two senior managers, again, appropriately experienced to be able to run the business that the firm is looking to carry on. And as I say, anything other than the simplest of businesses, you're likely to need more than just two senior managers. It's also important for a firm that is a UK incorporated entity to be able to demonstrate that its mind and management is located within the UK. So there, whilst you can have the sort of the senior management of a firm comprised of perhaps directors appointed by or representing the interests of parent organisations, and yes, of course, they can play an active role in the governance of the firm, but at all times it's important to be able to demonstrate to the regulator that the senior people that they're approving and who are located in the UK are the ones who are really making the key decisions of the firm, and therefore are responsible for the way in which the firm conducts its business. And if the regulator needs to sort of engage with them, they know that they'll be there and will be able to sort of comply with the regulator's requirements. It's very important, therefore, to understand that the FCA will not authorize what you might call a brass plate authorization. You do need real people of real experience and caliber located within the UK to be able to run the firm. In terms of the preparation, the submission of the application, this is one of those areas where you really want as few of the sort of to be confirmed kinds of things to in place as possible, because the FCA can only really work out what kind of firm it's going to be and whether it's going to meet its, the regulator's requirements if they've got the details and the forms and the CVs and the commitments from at least the critical key senior people in order that are going to be running the business once the FCA is has authorised the firm. So there, whilst there may be a natural desire to perhaps to get the application in and find the key people once the firm has been authorised, because it's mostly always easier to be able to appoint people to a firm that they can see is already up and running, that doesn't work from the regulator's perspective. So you will need to be able to say to identify at least those key critical people with enough sort of critical management mass, if I can put it like that, to satisfy the regulator that they can properly consider and assess this application. If the regulator feels that they're not there, that they can't, it may be a perfectly technically well put together application, but the key individuals aren't present in the application, then it's in all likelihood the regulator would ask the firm to take it back.
So we hear that the message here is a minimum of two senior managers that need to be based here in the UK in order to get through a successful authorisation with the FCA. But what does this mean for people like a compliance officer role or an MLRO? So firms need to disclose who the individuals are going to be holding those functions. How does that work?
Yes, of course. So a firm will need somebody who has been approved by the regulator to perform both the compliance role and the money laundering reporting officer's role. But depending on the size of the business, its complexity, it may be that the firm can quite legitimately claim that, at least in its sort of early stages, it's not proportionate to require it to have a full-time, dedicated, independent professional compliance officer. Same goes for money laundering reporting officer. It is for the firm to be able to satisfy the regulator that is indeed the case, that the nature of the business is such that it's not proportionate. It's also required that the firm can demonstrate that the compliance function, such as it requires sort of effective nonetheless. And so that would be where perhaps you might have one of the key senior people taking these responsibilities, and they are supported by a firm like ourselves, potentially, to actually perform a lot of the tasks related to the compliance oversight function. Again, you say it is a question of proportionality. Depending on the scale of the business when it starts, there will come a point where the regulator would say, no, this business, because of its assets under management, because of the nature of the activities, perhaps the risk profile from a compliance perspective of these activities, it is necessary for the firm to have a professional compliance person from day one. But to say, in principle, if you can satisfy the regulator that it's not proportionate to require that, and that is the burden is on the firm to do that, so you need to explain it in a reasoned way, and you need to explain how compliance is effective nonetheless, and so that's typically where firms use people like us to be able to supplement the fact that they don't have a full-time dedicated professional compliance officer from day one.
So we've discussed the corporate entity itself and the requirements around the regulatory business plan and the financial projections. We've spoken around the individuals that we need, so the senior manager functions and the information that's required on them. I suppose the last piece of the puzzle is, what about the owners, shareholders, controllers of the ultimate regulated entity? What are the FCA expectations in that regard?
Yes, so the FCA want to know who holds the ownership interests in the firm, and to be able to satisfy themselves that as people or entities, they are to be considered fit and proper to do so. So the FCA will need to know who the owners and controllers of the firm are, right the way up to the ultimate beneficial owners. Depending on the kind of license that you're seeking, anyone with either a 10% or more, or 20% or more interest in the entity will need to complete a controller's form, which has got quite a lot of detailed information required. But again, even if you're not technically speaking a controller, the regulator will still want to know who you are so that they can be satisfied that the people behind the firm they're authorising, as they are fit and proper. If you are a controller completing the forms, there's quite a lot of detailed regulatory disclosures that need to be provided, understandably. And also the regulator will want to be satisfied that the controller is of suitable financial substance. If it's a natural person, then information about their assets and liabilities needs to be provided. If it's a corporate entity, then they ask for 3 years of audited financials. Now, in many cases, that's not always available, and therefore sort of other options are available. But to say that whatever you provide, it is intended to be able to satisfy the regulator that this controller, say, is of suitable financial stability, and therefore its sort of collapse, financial collapse, isn't to be expected, and in such a way that perhaps would imperil the success of the regulated firm. The information that's provided to the regulator by the controllers is confidential. That's something that clients often ask, and yes, it's disclosed to the regulator, but it's not made public further than that. It's important to be aware that whatever the structure is at authorization, that's what the regulator has approved, and any change in controllers post authorization will need a separate approval, pre-approval by the regulator. So again, it's important to identify what's the structure likely to be at authorization, get the necessary approval, and be aware that any subsequent changes post authorization will also need a separate formal approval, pre-approval by the regulator. If the controller is either itself regulated by a financial services regulator somewhere else in the world, or is approved by another to be a controller by another financial services regulator, then it's very likely the FCA will want to seek assurance from that regulator of the good standing of the entity of the controller. That's something that needs to be sort of factored in, because it can be something that takes a little while. Sort of regulator talking to regulator, it can be something that can take a little while for it to be dealt with. There's not much a firm can do about that other than be aware of it and obviously provide the right information in relation to the whoever regulates it or has previously approved it, so that the FCA can make contact directly itself in an efficient manner.
So, is there an expectation that all of this information on the business, the financial projections, the business plan, the individuals and the controllers and shareholders is known at the time of the application? Or if firms really want to go through the process as quickly as they can they file and update the application as things change?
Yes, so that's a very, very common question that we get, and I think that way madness lies. It is important to be aware that the application really should be as complete as possible at the point of filing, and to avoid as many of the sort of to be confirmed kind of responses to the regulator as possible when you prepare and file the application, because the FCA really doesn't want to receive incomplete applications with key information missing, such that it has to ask far too many questions, and as far it can't reassess whether the firm is ever going to be able to be authorized or not, because it can't. For example, the ownership structure isn't explained, or the management structure isn't explained. So, there will be some things that cannot be completely finalized at the point of authorization, but any firm would want to keep those to a minimum. You ought to explain to the regulator what your plans are for securing sort of the final position in whatever it is, and always sort of have a plan B for any of the areas where there's a bit of uncertainty as to whether what you're proposing is likely to meet the regulator's requirements or not. It's important to understand that the FCA authorization is not intended to be an iterative process. Yes, the regulator will ask questions, but you say it's important that the application is as complete as possible when it goes in. If it's not essentially to be triaged, as the regulator sort of looks at it out of the in tray and to send back to the applicant until such time as they're ready to provide all the information that's required. For that reason, it's time spent preparing the application is time well spent, to ensure that when the FCA looks at it in its initial, say, triage of what it's received, it can be satisfied there is enough information there for it to go into the queue, the in-tray, as it were, waiting to be allocated to a case officer. Because, as I say, if the regulator feels that there isn't enough information in order for it to be properly considered to be a completed application for the purposes of consideration, they will simply tell the firm to take it back again. It's important when you prepare the application to answer the questions fully. It's also important to be sort of sympathetic to the needs of the case officer on whose desk this is going to land. That's one of the reasons why a regulatory business plan, a comprehensive one, is a good idea, because it gives that case officer an opportunity to understand what it is they're going to be looking at. It also is important to put a detailed index of everything that's been put in, clearly signposted. Again, that will help the case officer when it comes to finding the information. It's not doesn't mean that they won't still ask for documents, but that may be because the way the system presents the application to them is not particularly easy or user-friendly. But at least if you've got an index, it reduces the likelihood of being asked for things that actually are already there. And obviously, if you have provided them, it gives you an anchor point on which to point out to the regulator that, well, actually, we've already provided this or provided that.
So assuming the firm has a complete application, how long does it take, or what happens once that application is filed? What can firms expect to hear from the FCA, and in what time frame?
So the application, say, once all the forms have been completed, and you are talking of anything between 60 and 100 different documents, depending on the nature of the application and its complexity. You file the application through the Connect system. That is a bit of fun in itself, navigating through, attaching the documents and completing the various boxes. And then you make the submission and you pay the FCA's filing fee. They won't allow you to submit the application without paying the fee. Typically, that will be either £5,000 or £10,000, depending upon the nature of the authorisation being sought. I mean, there are. You can pay more for things like MTFs, but to say most applications, the wholesale market, between either £5,000 or £10,000. Application goes in and you get a sort of electronic receipt. It is then sort of goes through to the FCA's, I'm going to call them the triage department. Again, that's where they look and see whether it is whether it falls down on any of the key requirements to be able to be considered to actually be considered to be an application to be put sort of in the queue. And that's where sort of cases that I've had sort of I've assisted after the fact of filing have fallen down, when the regulator looks at this and realizes this is a no hoper. They haven't completed the right forms, and the regulator sort of says, can you please take it back and try again. So once it passes the triage, it's then sits in the queue waiting to be allocated to a case officer. That can take 1 to 2 months, or maybe if the regulator is particularly busy or short-staffed or whatever, up to 3 months potentially. But once it's been allocated, the case officer will introduce themselves to the applicant firm and say that they've been allocated the case and will shortly be reviewing it and letting the firm have the questions that they're going to ask. And they always ask questions, so it's quite proper. Assuming all is proceeding smoothly with the application, the business plan or the people behind the business don't present problems to the regulator, then what will happen is the case officer will review what they've been provided with and ask their questions. Quite rightly, they will ask detailed questions. Now, those typically fall really within sort of three camps. There will be perhaps questions for information, and potentially that information may already have been provided in the application. And that's where the detailed contents list is very helpful. There may be some clarificatory questions, things that the regulator, the case officer wants to be sure that the firm is not doing this or not doing that, or why are you doing this, that kind of thing. And then you might have some questions of real substance. And obviously, it's important that the firm responds fully and sort of promptly to those questions. Once those questions have been answered, again, assuming it proceeds the way it should do, then you'll get a supplementary round of sort of further questions that may follow on from the original ones and from the responses provided. And then once that's been done, you would expect to have perhaps a final set of questions, maybe after somebody seen at the regulator has reviewed the application and might have made suggestions for some other things to ask. Once those questions have all been satisfactorily answered, then the regulator will confirm that they've got no further questions and they're sort of minded to authorise the firm. That's at the point where you would, for example, put in the capital if you haven't already done so. So that's how it should work. Occasionally, it doesn't quite work like that. Occasionally, what happens is you do get, for whatever reason, a whole raft of questions in one area, which once they're answered, you then get a whole raft of questions in a completely different area. So it's not how it's meant to be, but sometimes that happens. So for whatever reasons. Most of these are through an exchange of emails, and it's important that the firm needs to understand that they'll want to deal directly with the senior people at the firm. They won't want to sort of have answers provided through their advisors, whoever they might be. But of course, they understand that the firm might be seeking advice in the help and the preparation of those answers. Sometimes they might decide to have a meeting with the senior people, typically over Teams. Now, that might be in one of two cases. The first is where the case officer thinks, well, actually, we can probably make quite good progress on some of these issues if we have a meeting rather than potentially a sort of exchange of a series of emails. Or it might be that the regulator has some particular issues with the application and wants to have a meeting with the senior people to discuss those and make sure they're properly addressed. So it does depend. You know, it could be purely to crack on with the application, or it could be actually because there are issues the regulator sees with the application and they feel they can only deal with it in a meeting. But I say typically that would be a Teams meeting. But once all the questions have been answered to the FCA satisfaction, that's when they would say that that they're minded to authorise the firm. The final steps that might need to be completed, things like putting in the capital, any final information that needs to be provided, any final sort of confirmations that things have been done that the regulator, that the firm said they would do, have all been perfected, and at that point the FCA will issue the authorization, the confirmation of authorization to the firm.
So once the FCA has issued the confirmation of authorization, what happens next, or is that it?
Yes, so the important thing to realise that, unfortunately, that's just the start of the regulatory journey. Once you've got the authorisation, then the firm needs to be able to ensure that it carries on sort of operating in a regulatory compliant manner. It's not like a trademark that once you've got it, you sort of bank it and move on. It, unfortunately, that's when you begin your life as an FCA regulated firm. When you obtain the authorization, first thing to do is to check the information that's been sort of provided by the regulator to make sure it's correct. I'm afraid sometimes, for whatever reason, systems errors or something, the approval documentation might not be correct. So it's important to check that. It's always better to solve it at the time than discover it some months later. The firm will also receive what you could call a welcome pack from the FCA, explaining all the things that they need to be doing in order to comply with them, with their requirements, and provide them with details of the various systems. Again, here I've mentioned Connect. It's not just a system for making an application. It's actually a system for regulatory transactions by the firm going forward. So again, it will explain how to set themselves fully up on the Connect system for life as a regulated firm. The same goes for the other one of the other systems, which is the reg data system, where regulatory returns are made to the regulator, principally prudential, but not exclusively. And also the regulator will move you to the supervision team, your appropriate supervision team, depending on the nature of the business. And they will start to engage with you through perhaps requests for information or even potentially a sort of direct emails to the firm asking for this or for that. There is something called the early oversight regime, which could potentially be appropriate for the firm, depending on the nature of the business. That is where you have a much closer 6 to 12 month oversight by the regulator once you're authorized. But that's sort of not for most firms. Mostly, so they move direct to the supervision, and that's where they will be. Typically, you know, the regulator will rely on the information that's being provided by the firm. They'll review that information. If they don't like or they've got some questions about what they've received, they will then make direct contact with the firm, or they might send requests for information that have a statutory underpinning that may mean that it's a legal obligation on the part of the firm to respond. And again, depending on what the responses are, the regulator may want to take sort of direct interaction with the firm after that. The firm will have explained in the application how it's going to be running itself, how it's going to demonstrate compliance with the regulatory expectations in the application. That's one of the things the regulator would have relied upon when determining to authorise the firm. So it's important that essentially whatever you said you would be doing to be able to run the firm in a compliant manner, you do, and therefore, whether a regulator to come in and look at it, they could see, yes, everything's been set up as you said it would be, everything's running along the lines that you said it would be run, and therefore, hopefully, everything's under control.
Stuart, thank you. That's been incredibly informative. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today on our webinar. We hope you found it insightful and interesting. If you do have any questions following the viewing, please do reach out to myself and Stuart, and we'll be delighted to assist you further.
Thank you.